Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, this is Rebecca Atkinson-Lord, and these are the Legacy Tapes, a series of conversations with awesome theatre people exploring what it is to try and leave something behind in the ephemeral medium of theatre. And I'm here at the Slunglow Hub with Alan Lane.
I'm eating curry whilst we're doing them.
Yeah, it's really good curry.
It's chora and mushroom. It's pretty good.
It's so good, thank you. So Alan's kindly shared his lunch with me, and I'm so happy about it. Mm. So we were halfway through a conversation before I turned this on. Do you want to just carry on?
Just the power of boards. I don't think it's something we talk about very much. We sort of, theatre people get together, or people who are interested in talking about theatre get together and talk about what it means when an artistic director goes here, or what a change it will be if this type of person gets that job. And actually, in the last 3 or 4 years, as long as I've grown up and as I've got a bit older, and therefore sit on boards and don't sit on boards and argue with people about why we don't have a board and all those things, you start to think about things that I just never thought about when I was just trying to make the shows I wanted to make, and realised how long-term strategically powerful they are. That if you, rather than seeing the next 3 years or the next season, if you see it in terms of what will that building look like in 10 or 20 years, those people are the people who absolutely drive the agenda.
Yeah.
How distant they are from even the most basic Arts Council diversity conversation, the kind of crudity of that, which just wouldn't be allowed in any sort of artist apart from Simon Callow and Julian Fellowes. And they're the people who hire the people who hire the people. They, that's important. And also that, increasingly, especially here as we come under pressure and ourselves pressure, getting older, having kids, all that crap, you are what you do. And you can write as many blogs and do as many speeches as you want, but you are what you do. Mm. And yes, we should allow people the room to have aspiration and ambition, but you are what you do. And if the most important people in your organisation are predominantly white, are predominantly old, are predominantly wealthy, predominantly professional, predominantly metropolitan, then you are what you do. And I don't want to hear any more shit from you that you are a house for, because you ain't a house for nothing, you're a house for them. And if they let other people in as their guests, you should be very lucky about that. But you are what you do, and our boards are incredibly establishment, incredibly on there are always individuals who've done this, but across the board they are a very conservative force. We don't have a board here, and that may well change, because it's a constant discussion, and there were times when it was a constant conflict. We don't have a board because this organization started as an ensemble, as a collective, and it was a company that has only been funded for the last third of its existence, and before that it was built on artists not paying themselves properly, on them putting their own money back in, and whether you do that job for me for free or I pay you and then you give me that money back in order for us to have production, it's the same thing. And actually, if you already come from money, you're able to demonstrate generosity in a way that you can't. If you're broke, then you're just working for free. That was where it came from, which was just, why would I want to give this thing that belongs to many people and shouldn't actually belong to anyone, the profit of which, there is no profit here, shouldn't belong to anyone. Why would I want to give that to people who are the good and mighty? And actually, any recommendations we've had when we've talked about the boards, that's always the conversation, is how are you going to get... There's a couple of lords in Leeds who sit on pretty much everything. Mm. How are you going to get that lord? I go, I don't want that lord. You are what you do, and that lord comes from a family who made his money in slavery. Mm. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But it's the prevailing common sense. It's, in fact, to do anything else would be an act of idiocy. And therefore, not having a board meant I didn't have to engage with that.
Yeah.
And then also, they are fundamentally conservative. And I know there are lots of people who say, I have an amazing relationship with my board, and they really empower me to do stuff. And we have advisory boards, and we have a community advisory board who have real authority here. But the risk is ours. And so when we say we're going to have the first Christian suicide bomber blow himself up, basically on the steps of Sheffield Cathedral as part of a show, the risk, the political risk, the practical, obviously, risk, all of that risk exists with us. And therefore, when we say we're going to do that, means we have scrutinised it. It's not recklessness. It's, we'll own that risk. We will hold that risk. Not, I've managed to convince my bosses that it's a risk too. And that actually, I think that if you're responsible, truly responsible for what you're doing, I can't quit. I can't have a hissy fit with my board and leave because they where am I going to go? All the people who work for me, I'm going to get. I can't abdicate that responsibility, and therefore I have to stay in the thick of it, and I have to compromise in a way that is in long term.
And you have to solve the problem.
Have to solve the problem, and I can't turn to daddy or mummy and say, "Please fix this for me," or "It's your fault," and I will demonstrate my principles by leaving. I will demonstrate my. You are what you do. I will demonstrate my principles by being here.
Yeah.
And if I'm compromised, then I will demonstrate. I can't say, "Well, I've been made to do this." I go, "Yeah, okay, yeah, you're right. I should have done better there, but I didn't, and now I'm still here."
When you made this place, or when while you're making this place, because it's evolving always. What do you want it to become? Like, what do you because this place is a pebble, right? And then there are these ripples that go out.
Yes.
What are the ripples? What do you want the ripples to be?
I'll do the idealistic, but then you must hold me to the pragmatic, because everything we do is those two things. And so I will stand up and give a big speech about we believe in this, but we believe in this because we couldn't believe in anything else. There is, I think, a really exciting opportunity at the minute, given how messed up our political discourse and our social discourse is, for theatre and subsidised arts generally, but specifically theatre spaces, to be a space where people can go and not be customers. And in doing that, might be unique in being able to do that. By the time they finish closing, you know, now you've got to pay to be in Park Run. By the time we've closed the libraries and we've screwed the schools up, it might be the last place you can go and not be a customer and be something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very excited about the idea that that might be multi-layered other things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I want everyone to come and become a communist worker. It's just something, I kind of do, something else. That you can go and not be a customer. And I think that theatres are really placed to be able to do that. But over the last 25 years, for really good reasons, and without anyone really being evil, our theatres don't do that. And primarily now our large theatres are run by people. They aren't run by artists more and more. We see artistic director in the second run of management. They are run by people who are constantly looking to improve and enhance the relationship of customer, not examine it any other way, and that's a major problem for me. Now that's our mission, that's the thing we believe, and what do we do about that? If we keep going back to this, you are what you do, then I can keep throwing bricks at the West Yorkshire Playhouse, but after a little while, what is the fucking point, quite frankly? What is the and this is a way in which we can test some of that, and of course and provoke some of that. And of course here, Five Railway Arches, there is absolutely no income generation target on this building at all. And we justify and manage that by making a lot of money from making theatre and taking none of it for any member of this company. And so there is a purposeful tension there, where by being absolutely transparent and by having a company wage, we say, look, we are literally above scrutiny here. You cannot possibly accuse us of being lazy or being unsuccessful or not understanding the importance of money, but this building does not generate any income for this building. So every single penny of the box office goes to the visiting artists. The bar is run at, it's not quite a loss, but it's certainly not a profit. And so the idea is to create a space in which people can come. A, they want to come. B, types of people who might think it's not for them might come, and we experiment in a number of quite old-fashioned ways of doing that. Turns out posters are better than Twitter if you want to talk to people who don't already think you're great. It's kind of basic stuff that we do, and we get an audience who don't go to other theatres and who don't even necessarily see coming here as going to the theatre. So that's what it does, and it does it very successfully sometimes. So we had a great allotment thing in Bathtubs, which was a great story, and everyone kept saying, oh, in a bit it's going to make sense as to why a theatre's doing this. And actually, it didn't. It never did. We just grew vegetables. There are moments when it really catches fire, and those, like Pay What You Decide, where we were not the first, but we were the first to be able to then hold onto the hand of someone in front of us.
Mm.
And I think Annabelle Turpin has really taken that on and is smashing it, and is very generous in saying, I wouldn't have done it if I hadn't been with those guys before. And actually here the risk is relatively low. The risk is to me and my team and to my family, and a kind of personal financial risk. To the Arts Council, we get £99,000 a year. We turn it into £350,000 a year, and the risk to them is that, well, I'm going to run away with their £50,000. Risks are low, and therefore we can be challenging. Interestingly, as we get older, there are then other risks that come in, but the actual risk to the organisation is limited. And that's what this tries to do, to try and try different ways of doing things. So a lot of, we do rights groups and choirs, just like most theatres do, but nobody pays and everyone gets a proper decent meal when they turn up. And that means that different types of people come. Some people come just for the food. I was like, yeah, what happens if they come just for the food? I'm like, well, then they'll
awesome,
be
they're
really
there.
Food.
Yeah. Like,
in a nation of food banks, you're welcome. The thing here that we keep holding on to as we change and move and grow a little bit, but not very much, is it's about a core team who do everything. So, and I think that's something also that is missing from our theatre, that the connection between the people who make the show, let alone the people in it. If you take from the cast to the kind of governance, the distance now is so large, and the manner in which people are paid and how they are contracted and how much time they spend in the building and what that time is for and how they talk to the public, all of that now is so disparate, even in the best practice of and I'm mostly talking about large buildings, not the kind of Hackney Wicks or the place in the bike shed next, you know, the places where there is a staff and a staff structure. We're now starting to resemble supermarkets. And
it's almost seen as a badge of success or a badge of honour, the bigger that gap.
Yeah, and the more structure you can put in place, the more protected the executive, then the board, then the funders can be from anyone doing anything that might be wild and reckless, the more you succeed. And that, and capital projects. I mean, no, nobody loved the fucking glory of capital projects more than funders and boards. But that's the ambition, is to try and be different and to be a testbed and to be the place where an alternative discourse can happen. Sometimes that's very successful, sometimes that's very not. So one of the things we've been looking at is this idea of philanthropy and going, well, we're in Holbeck, we're in one of the poorest neighbours in Leeds, how is philanthropy useful to us? But it has to be, because these edicts come down that everyone now must be environmental, and you go, okay, what happens in a building with no heating? What does that mean? And now philanthropy, and so we have a company wage which allows us to be able to measure people's time very clearly. It doesn't matter who you are, your time is measured the same. That's the principle, that no one is more important than any other. And so all of a sudden people giving time can be given a really clear financial value, which is pretty much unarguable. If you've come and spent the day weeding the garden, that's £100, because if you'd come and spent the day directing a show, that would have been £100.
Yeah.
And that actually allows us to be able to demonstrate reasonably rigorously, as long as you allow for that piece of rhetoric, that we actually, our community are giving us thousands of pounds every year, but they're not doing it in cash because they don't have any cash.
Yeah.
But if philanthropy, part of the argument has always been about, well, if people really care about what you do and it's of a quality enough, they will give you their money. Only works in a world where everyone has some money and some choices around money, which is part of the problem with the disconnect between people who say that sentence like it makes complete sense, don't realise that about 35% of the population have absolutely no spare money. It's not like going, well, I could spend it on booze or I could spend it on slumber. There's no fucking money. They're desperate. And therefore, trying to find other ways of going, well, okay, that seems like an absolute guarantee to lock out 35% of the population who have already been locked out three or four different ways. Let's try a different... And that's what we do. Where that really comes from is the pragmatic, is that they wouldn't give us any more money at the Arts Council until we got an office, because we were working out my dining room and we were turning over £200,000 a year, and there was a kind of chequebook and a sort of folder with some things in it. and brilliantly being provoked into, you will get an office. And there was a real, I'm going, we don't want an office, because an office in Leeds will cost about £25,000 by the time you only get £99,000 a year. That's not a useful way to spend our money. And then once it became clear that there was no budging them, and we spent a year arguing about it, is what is the most useful way for us to have an office? And and actually what we've ended up with is we're an office in a metal box in our yard. The most useful thing we can do is spend the money we would have spent on a nice inner city office with a glass table and spend it on a huge and ridiculous series of railway arches that are cold, but they are available to anyone, and anyone who wants them is given a set of keys. We've never been robbed by anyone with keys. Same rules with the van. If you're over 25 and you need our vans, then here's the keys. Same with all our kit. If you have need of it, then it's literally a two-quote. What is your name? What are you doing? And how long do you need it for? Removing the barriers between the resources and the thing has been the key here. So if we have to have an office, what's the most useful one? So in the early days, bless them, Rash Dash moved in, but it turned out that this was far too cold a complex for people to have an office in. But actually we now have a dormitory, we now have an 80-seater studio theatre of sorts. It's a space.
And it gets toasty. Like I've yeah. You like those Argo thingies, and they're awesome.
Yeah, and you get a hot water bottle and a blanket when you come in. And no show should ever last more than 75 minutes at the Hub. And there's some really good examples in Yorkshire of theatre that had something, that had a connection with people, that had a relationship beyond customer and provider of entertainment. And then they changed the bricks and mortar, and they changed the structure and where they sat in society, and they thought everyone would come with them.
Mm.
And they don't. They don't, because the thing changes. Me and you might have a favourite pub, and we might go to it, and amazing, and the beer might be exactly the same down the road, and the song, the jukebox might be exactly the same, but there's something about that place.
Yeah.
And it's about creating a relationship. And you throw that away, and the slightly snidey comment earlier about capital is about this argument of going, don't the people of Holbeck deserve a fancy theatre? Don't they deserve one with a glass dome? And you go, yes, of course they do. But what's the most useful thing we can do? And in Hull, to a lesser degree in Liverpool, and in places, these places have been transformed. And then they've gone, and you go, oh. Turned out there was some magic going on there.
Yeah.
There was something about that moment.
Because actually what the people deserve is a place with a soul.
Yes, absolutely. And they deserve somewhere strong enough to try and create a set of relationships that aren't just service and customer, that deserve many things. But this idea that that everybody deserves a building that looks like the Young Vic is redonkulous. And all these places are the same. They are the measure by which all other things are valued. And that is done by a very small group of people with a very clear set of aesthetic, political and social considerations that go, that's if we have that, we'll have made it. And it reminds me of the Victorian town halls. You know. My name is Garthwaite, and I will build a town hall to demonstrate that I am more powerful than Slytherin. Down there, because Slytherin's a Harry Potter. And I think that... that's a problem, and I don't know there's a damn thing that any artistic director in this country can do about that, because that problem is held at a much higher level than all those people, because at some point over the last 30 years we kind of abdicated our complete authority.
Mm.
And that's a real shame, because actually, you know, a proper creatively led buildings are, when they happen, are exciting things, but the structure, the infrastructure is not there. And that's what this was an attempt to be useful in being pushed down that kind of, you can't just stay an itinerant bunch of theatre makers if you want to be making shows of more than 40 grand production budgets or whatever it is. And we went, okay, we're going to go legit, but we're going to go legit in our way. And every single time, and it hasn't always worked, but every time we've given a new, whether it be philanthropy or the measuring of audience postcode, which is the latest thing, environmental policy before that, whatever it is where you go, we want all theatre companies to be able to fit through this door marked philanthropy. We've always gone, okay, but this might involve us taking some of this door down. And tried, when we have the energy, to scrutinise that.
You're rejecting the premise of the question.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But also living in a world, and this is about the comment, they're going, well, I need the fucking money. Mm. I mean, literally, everything we do is pay what you decide, and most of the time I give the box office away.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can keep prodding the Arts Council, and I can keep sometimes trying to convince, but you can't actually bite the hand that feeds me too hard. So I have to play that game. I have to fill in my form at the end of the year like everyone else. But that doesn't mean that I have to spend any time trying to get a lord to join my board.
You said something about there isn't any risk apart from to us and our employees, like it's personal financial risk. And I had a conversation with the chair of a board recently of a big zhuzhy building.
Yeah.
In the regions.
Whoa.
With a turnover of let's call it 4 million. And he said something along the lines of, well, you know, there are 219 employees here, so we have to think responsibly and carefully for them and that influences how much artistic risk we can take. And you kind of say fuck that to that.
Yeah, well, I suppose what I say is that It feels like there's a kind of monoculture, which is about all organisations are fundamentally the same when you boil it down. And I think that some organisations should be different. So I think some things shouldn't have to make a profit. I don't think libraries should have to generate an income, for example. And I think that theatre's main job isn't to create an environment in which their staff are secure. That's not the primary thing. It's a responsibility of management, and it's one we take, responsibility of employment, and one we take really seriously.
Mm.
But it's not one the industry takes very seriously. There is no responsibility of employment about actors or choreographers or all sorts of things.
Mm.
But it's when we get to that conversation you're having, all of a sudden someone goes, well, we have a responsibility. You go, hang on.
It's an exploitative responsibility.
Yeah, you have. Yeah, absolutely.
It's founded on these people not having that.
Completely. And it was also a series of choices that were made for people, in which you found yourself that Yeah, and lots of everything about Liverpool's history, Liverpool Everyman's history, is apocryphal and mostly made up. And that's I still it doesn't matter. I still believe it. It doesn't just matter that it's like the Bible. People die for this shit, and I will die for the history of Liverpool Everyman. When they started, there was a load of people on the stage. There was one guy who ran everything that was from the front of the stage back, and one guy who ran everything that was from the front row of the auditorium out into the world. And they did all right. Yeah. And I think that. The world has changed, of course the world has changed, but we've also applied a whole series of legislations and thinkings and belief structures that belong to other industries to theatre because we weren't confident enough in our own. And therefore we operate basically like restaurants mm-hmm. and bars that happen to have mm-hmm. this entertainment thing on its side. And I think that's a real problem. And the way that you can see that it's a slow change over the last probably 20 years, where the people at the top of the tree have moved down the tree and the people have moved around. And now you see it recently, a number of big jobs were advertised. And you go, hang on a minute, the artistic director sits in a management team of six, sits alongside the person who's responsible for restaurants. And when you kind of say that in that tone and go, whoa, they go, well, yeah, of course. You know, the restaurant turns over this much money and does all that. You go, how did we get to this point?
How did we get to the point where something that cannot be quantified or measured is absolutely measured in purely financial terms?
Yes, yeah. And because I think in the long run what we end up with is the defeat of public subsidy. The argument is inherent in how we're operating now. So if the idea is that you get that money and that allows you to make more money, then at some point you go, well, that's fine, just keep hold of the extra money you've made and we won't need to give you any more money. And that's really clear that's the agenda. And it was that moment when George Osborne, everybody cheered, George Osborne stood up and said, we believe in the arts because it returns whatever, you know, whatever it was. We've had, for every pound we invest,
we're supposed to get four back.
Four, 14, three and a half. I mean, you're making this shit up now. Mm. I mean, but he said it and everyone cheered and I went, we said that as one of eight arguments we were making about the arts. That man just stood up and that's the only thing he said.
Yeah.
So now any bit of art that doesn't make, and Sunderland doesn't make £4.50 for every pound you put in. I mean, we ironically do generate that income, but we do it entirely from other subsidised theatres under commissions. It's the same money going round and around and around. And so any art that doesn't generate that income is now failing art. Art that, you know, like the schools. Well, if we bring in the right management, we maybe, and then they apply the right structures that we've seen have worked at the Old Vic, we could have them doing that. No, because the theatre is about a relationship with the people and the place. And therefore, each of the time the people and the place change, so do the theatres. And so should what they do. And so should how they are built, how they are operated. I'm suspicious that the structures of every single producing theatre in this are more or less the same. That their programmes look suspiciously similar. And you're like, how can they look suspiciously similar? Because doing work there and doing work there should be different because those people are different. That seems to me not quite right.
No one makes work in the vernacular of the place.
No. And I think this thing about we have to look after our staff is that's not... We wouldn't allow that of a hospital. Hospital's there to look after patients and... When if a chief executive said, well, we have to do right by our staff. No, of course you do. That is not the
That's not what this place exists
for. It's not what it's for. And it's also not... And we've had this with the Labour Party. You know, is the Labour Party for the MPs? Or is the Labour Party for the members? Or is the Labour Party for the nation? And we're having this argument. But it strikes me as preposterous that you would say that a theatre exists in order to look after its staff. Of course you look after your staff. Even an outfit like us that started, as I say, as a collective, then became an ensemble... And then now is a kind of company in which people work because everyone got old and decided they no longer wanted to look at spreadsheets. There's still a responsibility. I work with the same people that I did 12 years ago, and 6 of those years they weren't paid. So there is a looking after. You don't get the best creative work from people if you don't look after them. Anybody who thinks otherwise is a buffoon. And of course there's a responsibility, but that doesn't dictate what we do and how we do it, and it shouldn't. And I'm always suspicious because it's always at the point when a theatre is doing something quite dull and therefore absolutely not in the interest of the art form and probably not in the interest of their audience that they decide it's their staff that need to be cared for the most. And I think the discrepancy between the type of longevity and reward that staff of buildings get in comparison to especially some of the artists who have made organisations' names.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, hang on a minute. That's big, which doesn't mean that I want administrative staff to be paid any less. I just want there to be a conversation that are about the principles of who is this building for.
Mm.
And then the final rant of this is theatre buildings do their main bit of work at 7:30 when the audience come in. And the main majority of staff aren't there then.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, is strange.
Mm-hmm.
Because you wouldn't ever have in a shopping centre managers and people who decide, you know, who only ever turned up to gala openings, who were never in the shopping centre any other time. And I do think, and absolutely, and I know that as this goes out, if they're listening, marketing managers of regional theatres will go over and go, I work my socks off. Yes, you do, and so do I. But the manner in which you work, the style in which you work, and who and what you work to needs to be investigated. Because a lot of the time, and we've seen this actually recently, you could be running a cinema, you could be running a shopping centre, you could be running a pub. And those skills are applied in theatre. And I don't think that's right. I think that's different. I think we are different. And how I know we're different is we don't obey the rules of market. Slumlord can't exist without subsidy. We've been very clear with all the people who fund us. We would not exist unless you have this money to go. This money allows you to build a big wall and keep market forces on the other side of it.
Mm.
If we let market forces in, only an idiot would try to give away free theatre in one of the poorest areas in a declining industrial northern town as a business proposition. It isn't a business proposition, it's an artistic proposition.
And a humanitarian one.
Absolutely. And the money lets us do that. And that's how I know we're different, because we are different.
Mm.
We are a special... But I think there's plenty of... You know, I feel the same way about healthcare and education and the military. It's all sorts of... and the police. All sorts of people who you don't want to be driven by market forces and the idea of, is there anyone who can deliver this cheaper? Yeah, there absolutely is. Look how that worked out in Iraq. I think there's all sorts of people and all sorts of types of society that should be protected from market forces. They are not as clever as we'd like to think they are. And theatre should be, and we seem to have given that up.
And it makes us all cogs in the big capitalist machine, serving the thing, the capital, the profit, rather than the thing that should really be, that we built to serve us, right? This society lark.
Yeah. So if the end goal is to entertain a bunch of people to the point where they're willing to give you a load of money, which is more money than you spent to build the thing, that's the market force of it.
Yeah.
And you go, great, I won't do this. I won't do any of this. This is a preposterous way. If you want to do it like that, do the tattoo, the military tattoo. If I can keep my mouth shut long enough and doing these sorts of things, one day I'm going to get that job. And that's an amazing model. People pay a fortune for it. All theatre should look like this. No theatre should look like Chris Good. If we're actually following up, but that doesn't make any sense for any of us to be doing that.
Mm.
And yet there is a hierarchical system. You think I'm joking about the tattoo, but I really want that. There is a hierarchical system which is implicit even in some of the most sort of alternative or upstream or other places in the industry, that we will upgrade, and one day you will get a big building. And you go, well, but those guys that run those buildings aren't stupid. They didn't want to go and do the monoculture. They got there and discovered there was no choice but to do it like this. So they kept doing it in order to keep those.
Do you think there is no choice? Like, because there's a bit of me that thinks, because I am naive, right? Like, I am an optimist, because otherwise I will die.
There's nothing wrong with it. We're accused of being naive all the time. What's the alternative?
Yeah, like, I think, well, exactly. Right, so there's a bit of me that thinks that somewhere, one day, like we're going to grow up,
yeah.
And someone will go, all right, let's try that on a bigger scale, and it will be glorious.
I think that will happen. I think my suspicion, and then the last, what's interesting, is quite a few interesting jobs have been up this last year, so you've seen everyone
on the merry-go-round.
Yeah, and go and you've gone, oh, they're talking to them, that's interesting. Okay, they're thinking about that. And then they've all settled.
Yeah.
And you go, okay, great. And as always...
Most of them are still administrators. But
it's basically the same, you know, fine. Yeah. It's the same thing. You know, where. But I think there is a decline. I think that where the best examples that we can hold on to, and I think Daniel's a really good example... If someone has taken something and made a success of it,
Daniel Evans, because that Daniel was before Evans, we started recording.
Oh, sorry,
yeah,
Daniel Evans. I don't believe in willy washing anyone for the sake of some sort of industrial harmony. But actually, I'm a big fan of Daniel Evans. I think we really enjoyed working for him. But there are many more people who are not succeeding in that way, and the rate of decline partly under sheer funding pressure and lots of others, and a lack of imagination, and the generation, and again, there are some really great notable exceptions, but you can, the generation that are in charge of our producing theatres now are fucking tired. And you can see it in their eyes, they're tired. And I work for most of them, and they're tired, and most of them have been in their gigs for a very long time, and they're tired. They're just tired. And they're gonna run out the clock.
I'm tired now, though. I bet we all are. But I suppose what I mean is tired, and I don't think
they've got any more ideas. Mm. And they'll run out the clock, and eventually one of those buildings is going to go to the wall, and that's when they'll ring someone like you or someone like me and go, do you want to take over? When it's in the fucking gutter.
It's in the pan. When it can't get any worse.
When it can't get any worse, they'll go and we almost word for word this conversation with the Arts Council recently, where I said, when it's absolutely fucked, you will ring. And probably not me, I'm not that vain, but someone like me, someone by which I mean not a white heterosexual man, someone who has been talking about a different philosophy for a different way of being for a long enough time for it to make some sense, to give them more responsibility, and they will have to climb up the biggest fucking hill there is. The sad thing is that there's a load of resource there now, and they say, there's no money. There's loads of money.
So much money.
So much money, and we spend it in a certain way, and it's spent... it's justified spending that way because of pragmatics. Those, but like, I have to look after my stuff, and those pragmatics absolutely are set on a load of beliefs and principles that these guys who are in charge now didn't agree to. They didn't. Mm. They just walked into the job and went, oh, we believe. Why do we believe all of that? That's a weird thing. That's the thing to believe in 1997. This is 2014 now. Don't believe. Oh, because my board and the. I see. Right. Well, then I'll move within that. And I think anyone who takes over now and who wants to do anything radically different is doing it through concrete. And I've seen, and there's some. I mean, I know I've been disparaging, but there are some brilliant, brilliant people in charge of things at the minute. And I'm big fans, and I won't name any of them because I'm about to kill them with faint praise. But you can see their effort to make change. You can see their effort to recalibrate the principles and beliefs. And that is through concrete. And the other thing, so just on what you said about being tired, is it was true. So when Erica Wyman took over Gate, what was she, 12? Was she 26 or something? She took Northern Stage at 29, which means that she's going into the Deputy Artistic Director whilst there is a vibrancy and energy about her. And it was true, if you go back a generation before, or in fact two generations before, people would realistically... Richard Eyre was doing the Edinburgh Lyceum at like 14 or something, daft. Running Nottingham for 4 years.
Peter Hall run the arts at 23.
You know, so you could have Richard Eyre deciding that in Nottingham that it was a good idea to commission Ken Campbell. No, now they're all sainted bearded men, but if you look at the equivalent people, it would be like giving over the main stage of Leicester to Chris Good. This would you would be removed from post for doing that. Almost 30 years ago, it gave us some of the most interesting stuff to talk about regional theatre. And the same as the sort of, Nottingham's a really good example where the came after air was a strident feminism, then you had batshit crazy shit going on over in Liverpool, then you had science fiction nonsense for 3 years. And there were people who were much younger, and what you have to demonstrate now, and quite openly, it's not a hidden thing, they say it to your face, you go, we're looking for a calmer, more mature, you go, great, I don't think that artistic leadership is about the adjectives you've just told me. I think it is about something else. And what's interesting is, will this generation, and I understand I'm getting old now, but will the lot who have been slightly locked out, when they finally get their go, will they hold their nerve? Because I think that if you've worked freelance or worked for an organisation like Slung Low on 500 quid a week, and then you get the job, and you go, it's going down there, but you go, it's £50,000 a year, and you go, wow, I kind of don't want to be fired in 18 months. I really don't want to be fired in 18 months. And I've seen that happen, and where you go, having gone from, it's great, with a pizza, to living a completely different life because you're fucking tired, because you've done 20 years. Mm. You know, we make 9 to 10 shows a year here. That's not sustainable. We've been doing it for 10 years. It is not possible to make that much work. Some of them are terrible. No, I shouldn't say that out loud.
But you should. It's really important we say some shit's terrible.
We make a lot of work in order to make our model work, and in order to be useful, and in order to be able to put bread on the table. And after a little while, that's fucking exhausting. So I don't have any I don't condemn anyone who gets that job and goes, I'm tired now, and I just like, and you go, yeah, okay. But I think someone's got to take one of those organisations and rip the damn roof off, if only to demonstrate, can this work?
What do you think it would take? Because, you know, I have a list. I have a list of the gossip of the places where it's gone to shit and been saved secretly. I'm sure you do.
Oh, God, the amount of money they've piled into two or three northern theatres is ridiculous.
What would it take?
I don't... For one of them to close.
Or for them to go, oi, Alan, sort this shit out.
I think the difficulty is that probably at most levels of the Arts Council... And in fact, I spoke at a conference recently where they got the chief executive and the artistic directors in the room and then had a load of different people shout at them about different things in the hope that it would... And actually, there's nothing quite like shouting at the people who employ you for fun. I don't think that any of the people in that room can change that. I think I worked for Ian Brown, and he was at the Playhouse before James Brining, and actually he's a really, really lovely guy, and I owe him a great deal. He's much maligned by a particularly... Leeds has a bigger problem than Ian fucking Brown. Ian Brown was a very nice man and a very good director, but I remember a conversation, if he didn't say this, then it was around the conversations. I'm not directly quoting him because he'll only bring me and tell me I'm wrong, but if you put Twelfth Night on in September and it doesn't sell, then there's something about people not wanting to come to the theatre. Because you put Twelfth Night on in September, that's what you do. It's what you do. It's a wise thing to do. It's a safe thing to do. And if it doesn't work, it's not your fault.
Maybe it's because they're bored of Twelfth Night in September.
Yeah. If you put on Joel Horwood's... whatever Joel Horwood's doing next. I did The Count Monte Cristo by Joel Horwood. It was brilliant. If you put that on, then it doesn't sell. You shouldn't take a risk on your writing. If you put on Chris Good... really is Chris ready for a mainstream audience? If, I don't know why Chris is getting named.
How is Chris? I mean, because to me, in my world, Chris is like...
Yeah, I know. Well, that's... Yeah, we live... Yeah, there's such a wide... Yeah. The kind of upstream of theatre incorporates so many people that from... Yeah. But there is a received wisdom of how you are successful. And if you go against that, you've got to win. If you go with it, you don't have to win. You don't have to win. I have sat in so many 12 nights that have played to barely fucking anyone. And that's because we didn't get the marketing right, or we got to maybe cast up. But it was the right. But it,
no, it's because it's 500 years old, and we've seen it.
It's because But there is a received, and if you take that out of individual shows at individual times of the year, it continues. There is a received wisdom of, well, you're fine. Your tactic and your strategy was right. Maybe you need a different director of communications. If you go, actually, fuck that. No more 12th night. I am going to put on a play about anti-Semitism, and I'm going to get it done now because that's what we should be talking about fucking now, and we're going to rehearse it in 2 weeks, and that doesn't work, then you're a madman trying something mad, and you're mad, and you're not receiving. And you, okay, but I bet they'll sell to the same fucking four people. I bet the same fucking... And the number of things we make now, large-scale, community-engined, political plays that happen in the streets of our northern cities, that the last one was about English nationalism and fundamentalism, and the one before that was about Islamic fundamentalism and the place where the 7/7 bombs come from. But because it's community theatre, everyone goes, oh, that's fun. And we play to the same number of people as your banker, whatever your banker is, your Jane Austen, your Shakespeare, whatever. It's the same. We lose the same amount of money. We just look fucking wild doing it. But they're all risks. Even when they come off, they're risks. Whereas do your Midsummer Night's Dream. How many dreams are there this year? Do your dream, and it doesn't quite work, and the board goes, well, you know, we sold a bit more before when we did it 5 years ago. That should be the first alarm bell ringing. There is something about risk and vision and direction, and I think it's because there is a set of principles, and they are fundamentally conservative small c principles about civic value of art, which is why we want nice buildings, places that people... It's the fucking town hall of Northern England argument all over again, driven by exactly the same types of people that 120 years ago would have been building red brick town halls, but now they run theatres. And I think that's a problem, and that's why I don't particularly judge any of the people not being able to fix it now. And I think whoever goes into one of those sinking things, as we have seen recently with some people going and coming, if they don't have the authority to tell the board, shut up, we're doing it like this for 3 years, they're done.
Trust me or fire me.
And I think you've got to do this, and this is interesting because I think it's happened to a number of us in the last few months. You do that at interview. You do that at when that phone rings, and it's that same fucking headhunter that does every single... That's the whole other thing. Every single job in this country, you go, I am going to do this. Well, they're not going to get you.
And you go in and you say, I'm an innovator, and if that's not cool, don't make me waste the train fare.
I'm going to, and so whatever it is, my thing is, we will change the relationship with the audience and make it one that isn't about an advancement on customer. We're going to look at it differently.
Mm.
And when you're talking to someone whose job it is to protect an investment from the government, normally a lawyer, normally on at least three of the northern buildings that have anything to do with, yeah, someone who actually asset managers, a wealth manager in the north of England, and then either there's normally an academic or a, those people you go in and go, so yeah, it's this system of capitalism. I'm not sure that it's going to be around forever. And those people go, okay, he's clearly a fucking communist. And I think, and of course there are others, and there are plenty of other people who are much smarter than me who think alternatively, but fundamentally they are thinking alternatively, looking at the societal structure and saying, I don't think this will sustain forever. And I think one of the things that our theatre buildings are seen to be done by councils, especially local councils, the only reason they're funding them now, is that they hold our structure of civic beliefs together. They're there with the swimming pool and the gymnasium. They are those things, they are building blocks. And someone comes along and goes, I'm pretty sure you could have a Leeds playhouse without a building. And everyone goes, are you mad? Guys, you've got 7 fucking theatres in this city. In this city centre you have 7. How many would you like? How you're spending all of this money doing this. I'd love to see someone ask me the other day, all right then, smart ass, what would you do? I'd stop giving all the money for doing things to buildings. Because they use, and it's one of the reasons, I love these capital projects, and you go, it's costing 7 million, but you're asking for 9, because the 2 extra is actually going to keep your core thing, because you've managed to get every single core member of staff and bind them into that capital. So if these people don't keep building shit, and don't keep putting new seats in, they can't pay their staff. And that's why we keep growing. And then, of course, there's people, because they've built it in, they're going to have an increased income generation. An income generation target that they can't hit now. No. They're going to be able to hit once they've been closed.
And there's this assumption that in so many buildings, we need this new building in order to make us more financially resilient. It's like, if you can't fucking generate 20 quid, how are you going to generate 800?
Yeah. And one of those things is because we've got a staff of 200 and therefore we've got a wage bill of X. So we need to raise that money. And you go, yeah, you can't. You just. It's not that you're not making great theatre. It's not that you're not a lovely chief exec or whatever else it is. Mm-hmm. This game doesn't work. And here in the north, we have. I think the best model, the most interesting model that combines the low and the high and the interesting everything else is Sheffield. They are doing it better than anyone else. And when they do anything, it is done well. It may well be that you look at it and go, "Well, I wouldn't have done that," but it's done well.
Mm.
And the number of things that are needed in order to make... They have a huge commercial house that they don't even touch and just put commercial product into it. They close for 6 weeks of the year in order to put snooker in and with literally their name right. And those things are so uniquely fucking... The idea that you can recreate that anywhere else, you go, this Sheffield isn't the demonstration of how it can be done well. Sheffield is the demonstration of how many fortunate historical accidents you need to get to the point where people come in and run that show well. It doesn't seem like there's a strategy anymore about any of this, about what are our theatres for, how are they going to be more interesting. There is an incredibly market-driven, profit-generation-driven conversation that will lead to theatres in places that can't manage that and thinking really, you know, fuck Liverpool. There's a new fucking... They're building a new theatre between Manchester and Liverpool. Between Manchester and Liverpool. Fuck! And Hull and Newcastle... And you know, you're like, if you can't be different with your, if you're going to be forced to play the game of how much money do people pay, that's how much they love you, all those places will lose. Whereas the more interesting model is what's happening in Derby, where they go, okay, well let's look at education as a thing, let's look at just these places that do things differently. Then there's a bit of life there. You go, okay, there's some friction there. But otherwise, it's 12 nights all round in September.
All right, I'm wrangling you back to the point of the conversation.
Oh, yeah, I can't even remember what that was.
Which was, like, legacy and shit.
Legacy and shit, yeah.
Yeah. So, what's... I don't know, like, is there a legacy? Are you leaving a legacy, Alan? What is Slumlow?
Can't let go. It's so... Yeah, sorry.
Like, what...
So, one thing we've said a lot, And then when we used to say it 6 years ago, it didn't cost us anything. And now, of course, it costs us a lot. And that's okay, because principles are no good unless they're actually put under any pressure. Otherwise, they're just blog posts. Is that if we decide that this is no more for whatever reason, then they shouldn't go to, you know, someone really brilliant who I find really... James Blakey is a brilliant young director. Increasingly not like a really lovely guy. They shouldn't go to James Blakey and go, here's Slung Low. Would you like Slung Low? Come and do this. Because Slung Low is made up of a load of people who grew up in it. We were... People who found this company were all first year university, absolutely no theatre history at all, entirely from a working class background, who said they want to run a theatre company. And if you do that and you keep going for 16 years, you end up here. This place works because everybody who works here gets £500 a week. Everybody who works here is willing to drive the van. We all have van licenses. We all have food hygiene. It only works because of that. And some days that's amazing, and it's like being perpetually on camp. And some days I think I have done over 100 shows. I'm about to do the national commemoration of the Battle of the Somme. I'm getting old. Do I really want to clean the toilet today? And that's okay, because I did that to me, and that is a constant conversation with me and the gang. And there'll be a day when we go, we don't want to do it anymore. If we hand it over to someone else, the first thing that any board who took over would say is, you have to pay them more money. Because you can't ask an artistic director who does national programmes, who directs at the RSC, to work for 24 grand a year. You just can't do it. And the minute you pay anyone any more money from this place, and we've done it, we've done all the kind of the, you go, well, we need to raise more income. We make 9 shows a year. So we would have to, we can't make any more shows than that. It's preposterous. So we'd have to make shows in the markets that provide us more money. So now all of a sudden we wouldn't do tours of rugby clubs in northern towns. We would have to do more corporate work. So the identity of the company changed in order to make it survive. Or what you'd really do is go, we're going to have to start taking some money from the shows that visit the hub. So now coming to the hub and pay what you decide means that more often than not, the people who come here do at least as well here, but more often than not, better than other places they go of a similar size. Now they're going to do less well. So now all of a sudden the hub, as being an oasis of other, of different, of pushing back the market forces, is now so why should anyone have to deal with this shit where we got here and we're holding it all together with goodwill and effort? The minute it becomes a thing that must be sustained, it changes its identity. So a much bolder thing would be is to go, I'm done, I'm going to go and be a goat farmer. Here's the money back, Arts Council, we're closing. It would take us a month to move out maximum. By the time we'd flogged everything off, that would pay off the last bill, so it would be a clean sweep. Here's the money back. We didn't spend a penny more than you gave us. Give it to someone else.
You could go into the West.
Yeah. Go give it to Javed Ali Poor over in Bradford, who is a brilliant young man, who desperate needs a vehicle who's going to push it. Give it to Commonwealth and say, Commonwealth, here's 99 grand a year. Be you. But use that money so that instead of having to faff around each month trying to work out how you're going to pay your mortgage, paid your mortgage. Two members of staff have their mortgages paid, got an office. What are you going to do with that? That seems to me, but they won't. They won't do that. They'll say, and this is the big thing, What's your
exit strategy?
Yeah, like, I haven't got an exit strategy. I'm directing the National Commemoration of the Somme, doing a show at the RSC. Next year, I'm making 2 shows for Hull. Probably do a little caravan tour. We're going to move the bedroom around in here. I don't know. And then next year we'll do something else. And we'll continue to. Being as no one's willing to commit to fund me for the next 4 months at the rate, say, 4 years in the next rate, why should I commit to what I'm going to do for the next 4 years? And that strikes me as the most sensible thing. If we were to build this system here in order for it to sustain the loss of every member of staff over 6 months, which is what's happened to a number of theatres nearby, the system would have to change. So the thing would change. The demands for a sustainability and a longevity change the thing. But actually, we've scrutinised the thing.
So is really what we should do, instead of having these big, like, umbrella organisations that people fit into the structures of, and they suck, not always, but most of the time,
yeah,
right? Should we, let's, you know, lay waste to all of that?
Yes.
Some sort of nuclear bomb.
Burning ceremony. I was at the RSC Live the other day. I was actually in Stratford, and I thought, if only the alternative theatre scene had drone strike capabilities, they could have used my watch as a GPS tracker. I would have sacrificed myself, because you would have knocked out top 25% of the theatre industry, and everyone would have got to move up.
Yeah.
And then you would have got, I don't know what, you would have something like, National Theatre Studio or something. You know, do you know what I mean? You'd have just, they don't have that anymore. They have the other thing.
But you,
I mean,
the only work,
yeah, and everyone would have just gone up one, and you would have been like, "Oh shit!" And we, you know, Unlimited would have been really bewildered as to why they'd been given Bristol Old Vic. But they're like, "Fuck it,
fuck it, we'll do it.
Fine, it works." Yeah.
So should we do this thing where, because I'm just thinking about, you guys are like mushrooms, right? You kind of pop up and you grow in the place where you will flourish, and then when you won't flourish there, you die.
Yeah.
That's what an ecosystem is, right? Yeah, you should run it more like an ecosystem.
Yeah, I think we have no way, and there's no way of killing a theatre. The Arts Council can't allow it, because the minute they shut the money down, there'll be a big decaying theatre in the middle of the town. The Arts Council will become the least popular people in the world. The board of the charity actually have in their thing, their mission is to keep it going. That's actually their kind of legal responsibility. Mm. So to be able to say, actually, I'll pick on them because they're nearby and they're terrible. No, teasing. West Yorkshire Palace is no longer the best way of generating theatre in Leeds. They just aren't. It's not a reflection on an individual, they're just not. So we're going to close that model down, and this is the other model. That's an impossible conversation to have. So what we have is, we don't necessarily like all of the model of how the West Yorkshire Palace works, so we're going to do something different. So you introduce Transform Festival, you change all the staff, you do everything else, but the structures are much more powerful than all that. So you end up in exactly the same place. So we've got to learn how to kill things. And I think that in order to let other things arrive. And I think the biggest thing is that people and time and place come together with funding and really amazing things happen. And whatever bent you are of who your theatrical heroes are, they're about individuals who hit the moment and are supported to do something extraordinary. The people who come after them are normally always terrible. So where you have bang, wow, what a force of energy in Leeds. We had Jude Kelly, and lots of people hate it, lots of people like it. Doesn't matter. Everyone accepts, bang, something happened, because there was an energy, there was a thing, and it was supported. The actual structures that were there clearly don't work, because we have exactly the same structures now, and we haven't got that burst of energy, and it will come again. Grandage in Sheffield, what came after that, not so much. Then Daniel came back flourishing, new guy, maybe. It's about individuals, and the structures are the things that get in the way. And so but at the minute, we have people who value the buildings, because they are more permanent. But the people who are valuing those buildings, they're not valuing them for the same reason me and you value theatre. They're valuing them for a completely different set. They would have been happy with a really nice motorway bridge. We should have given them a really nice motorway bridge. And leave the theatres to... Because the best form of progressive change is not the large organisations who... And in the North, that's nearly always a producing theatre. And yet, we've got into the habit in the last 5 years of, well, we'll nurture new artists. Well, okay, we've got a pot of money for that. Fantastic. Who should be the one we could ask the buildings? Well, they haven't been nurturing their new talent for the last 10 years. Why did you think
they
were going to be...
And they don't have permeable enough walls that they even know, that they even go out enough from them to know what's out there.
What we need our theatres to do is that... And we're okay if they're a little bit quirky and they do a little bit of things, but that is a narrative... That's normally through Lynn Gardner's blog and people shouting on Twitter. The actual narrative of theatre in this country is there will be a Midsummer Night's Dream for you to see at any theatre wherever you live in the country this year, and next year it will be 12th Night's Turn again. That's the overarching narrative. And occasionally something different happens and we'll go, wow. But then we revert back to type really quickly.
Right. So I just asked you what your legacy was and you said maybe there shouldn't be one, basically.
Yeah.
Right. So that's in terms of this place.
Well, I didn't answer about Holbeck, actually, because that's the other thing. Is Holbeck, when we moved in, was much rougher than it is now, and it's going through.
So this is important, because there are big ripples here.
Yeah, but the area is really, really transforming and is amazing, and it's really undergoing. And Burberry's just built. So there used to be a massive wasteland and an empty warehouse, and the warehouse is now going to be taken over by Burberry. And there used to be a massive wasteland and then empty houses, and those houses are populating. There's going to come a point in the future where Holbeck don't want 5 scruffy railway arches with vans pulling up all night every night with a massive steel ship in the yard. They're going to want something else. Traditionally what's happened is, at that point, I see the way the wind's blowing and I say, why don't Holbeck deserve an art centre? And then we fundraise the art centre and we open it. And in 10 years' time, no one can understand why Alan Lane is doing Pinocchio or whatever the fuck it is for the 15th year running and is being angry with his star. That's the wise thing to do. That's the mature and sensible thing to do. I hope we hold our nerve. And it may well be what I do. I got a kid. I ain't like, shit, go and pay my bills and stuff. And it turns out £500 a month is £500 a week ain't what it used to be. So maybe I do that. I hope I hold my nerve and go, no, you need something else. And that's not our job. Our job isn't to do that. Our job is, we'll go somewhere else. We'll find somewhere else and we'll start this process again and we'll go somewhere, and where we go won't be like Holbeck and it won't have the same needs. So we might be that pay what you decide is no longer relevant. Might be that pay what you decide was the right solution to the problem we were presented with, and then we started to scrutinise it, and that's why we talk about it. Where we go might be, you go, wow, this is a completely different set of problems and we need a different solution, and that solution is no longer pay what you decide. And I hope we have the courage to go, well, that's exhausting, and now I'm in my mid-40s and I don't want to reinvent it all again. And I hope I have the courage to go, yeah, but why would we not be useful? You are what you do. Why would we come in and not respond to these people? It could be that as we grow, you know, we've got a show at the RSC coming up, you know, we can be fancy when we need to be. Maybe as Holbeck grows, so we grow and we end up being the thing that Holbeck needs. Mm. I think probably that won't be allowed to be an evolution. I think that at some point someone, and it's normally a developer, property developer, who realises that having land isn't there. Fine, that's the law of the land. I never wanted to rip capitalism down. I just think you can create little pockets in it and we'll go somewhere else.
Do you really not want to rip it down?
Well, yeah, I do, but you have to say you don't you, so people don't think that you're a proper commie.
No, fuck that.
Yeah.
Let's normalise alternative ways of thinking.
For me, it's about creating space where people go, and people who come here are not in any way, they're not used to going to the theatre, and they're not used to, they come here, and it's only 3 days afterwards to go, so I can just choose whatever I want to pay for this food. Yeah. But it's really good food. Yeah, no one ever said that communal living had to be shit.
Mm.
And when that stops being useful in this place, so the legacy will be, of course there'll be a legacy, we've made an impact, but I hope that we don't want the legacy to be that we are made comfortable. That's not a driving force of us, but that will require us, and it gets harder, it was much easier 6 years ago when we were like, let's move into a cold railway arch, and now I'm like, knees hurt. But that's also, I think, why there needs to be some sort of churn, because I'm 37 and I shouldn't still be running a file. You know, the industry is not moving fast enough to incorporate the talent, and I'm definitely not talking about myself now, incorporate the talent that's coming through, and people are hitting glass ceilings all over the shop, and I feel for the guys in the above and the two steps above that. Where the fuck are they meant to go? Where are you meant to go once you've run wherever for 10 years? But 10 years should be the time. Yeah, go to the great hall of artistic directors. But it's a tough gig. But like so many, especially the kids, we've had assistants that started out with us, you know, so they were a few years younger. Now I'm like, they just need to be put on the, you know, there was a great idea someone talked about, 30 most exciting young companies, and by young I mean, you know, Rash Dash could be one of them, and they've done a show at the National, for fuck's sake. Give them 100 grand. Give them 75 grand, enough for the salaries for the main creators, and an office and some insurance, and say, okay, but now you don't have to beg for every gig.
And that makes a massive difference.
So what we get here, we get 99 grand a year, basically pays for the hub, and partly because we lend our vans out, we spend a quarter of all our funding on insurance. But then we blow shit up and talk about terrorism in public squares, so, you know, I'm glad we've got good insurance. And then the producer, and so we can run our books and everything else. That's it, that's the money gone. In order to pay me, I gotta hustle. And I like that, fine. I don't want, you know, £300,000 and a fleet of associates. That's why I make 9 shows a year. But we could do that for the other companies. We could do that and go, okay. Now, what does that freedom give you? There are like 4 paid directors in Leeds. That's a real problem. You know, if you want someone to go on the news, you want someone to go on the radio, you want someone to write an article, that's what I'm paid to do. I'm going to talk to the university. That's it. I have the money to be going, oh, okay, I'll do that. I'll hustle. And we've got people thinking reasonably intelligently about art and being public about it. I've got 4. Everyone else is freelance. Well, they're too busy trying to make a living. Mm. That's a problem. That's a problem. And I think they're all men. That's a problem. And everyone but me went to Oxbridge. That's a problem.
Mm.
It comes to something when Alan Lane is your most ghetto person. That is a fucking problem. That is a problem.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything else you want to say?
No, I've had a lot of fun. Thank you very much for talking to me.
Awesome. Thank you for talking to me. I'm going to wait.
Want to do the washing up?
Yeah, totally. Communal living and all.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.